They lied, they took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried, hide. Sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lied. I ain't telling you nothing you don't already know, but the government's been lying to you, Joe. They're shaking your hand while showing you the door to a foreign land, so you can fight the poor, where every Arab is a terrorist and they're hiding weapons that don't exist. You can join a coalition of willing nations willing to kill civilians for the corporations. They lied, they took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried to hide, sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lied. Tonight is the night that you give up your rights to the Patriot Act and the perilous fight. But you won't remember which country you're in when you wake up in the morning by the dawn's early light. If it reminds you of the Third Reich, you better keep quiet. If you don't like, better watch your backs, cover your tracks, cause you're paying for it all with your federal tax. They lied, they took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried, hide. Sing and shout, truth wins out. Everybody knows they lie. Now come on, did you see that presidential smirk? Say don't look now, it's Captain Kirk. He's an arrogant jerk, though likable too. But the Federation's been lying to you. The Federation, the corporation, is supposed to be a public radio station. They're violating the neutral zone to promote the imperial corporate nation. Blow up Afghanistan, nuke Iraq. We got the biggest phasers on the block. We're the world's policemen around the clock. You got the comm now, Mr. Spock. To the victors go the spoils. The lithium crystals, petroleum oil. They hate our freedom for no good reason. Arabs and Klingons, it's open season. They lied, they took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried to hide. Sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lie. So you know that the government's been lying to you, and I know that you know that it ain't nothing new. That's politicians, that's what they do. They've been lying since 1492. They didn't teach me when I was a kid about all the terrible things that we did. We'll always honor this sacred treaty with a smallpox-covered blanket, sweetie. Agent Orange and napalm, Gulf of Tonkin, Vietnam, Iran-Contra, Watergate. It's a history of the criminal state. We're spoon-feeding it right out of the box. We're fair and balanced, says the Fox, while talk show shills are shouting out, it's liberals we gotta be worrying about. They lied, they took us for a ride. Tried burying the truth where it very nearly died. They lied, but no matter what they tried to hide. Sing and shout, the truth wins out. Everybody knows they lied. My mom said, really, if the news was controlled by corporate money and held in a stranglehold, I would have heard about it on the TV. If it was really so important, then I would have been told by the newscasters and the pundits and the anchors and their pals, the politicians, generals and bankers. You say they're doing the old bait and switch, but why would they lie? They're already rich. Power corrupts, it's the ancient trend. The list of lies will never end. New lies coming around the bend. Speak truth to power if truth is your friend. They lie to me, they lie to you. They lie to themselves, and ain't nothing new. They lie to the press who passes the buck. They lie to the world, now everybody.
Welcome, and thanks for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program includes Vulture Picnic. Greg Pallas presents his investigation of the BP oil spill and talks about the corruption he says permeates the oil industry, the financial sector, and the government. Greg plays the part of a hard-bitten detective. And then after that, the world fears the U.S. Ex-Senator and former U.S. presidential candidate Mike Gravel says the U.S. is like a drunkard who charges to war with any country who might pose a threat.
In pursuit of petroleum pigs, power pirates, and high finance carnivores, the intrepid, the muckraker, the magnet for confidential documents, the imitable Greg Pallast.
If you pick up a copy of Vulture's Picnic, it is Penguin's first truly film interactive book. And if you touch the top of each chapter, a film will appear, just like that. But if you get my friends keep getting the Gutenberg versions and keep punching the the top chapter, but if you get this good piece of wood, a copy of Vulture's Picnic, you will miss those films, according to my publisher, because you have to get the video interactive, amplified, enhanced, super dupe, iPad, iPhone, whatever the heck. And they've asked me, there's a film for every chapter top, all 15, where you get to meet the people, get to see the photos. And my publisher, because you have to spend $2, $3, $4 extra for that, asked me not to make those available for free, because they said it's not our corporate policy, which means they've never read any of my books. So you can get them free at vulturespicnic.org. When you get the book, just send me a note, say that you're a friend of WPFW. My name is Greg Palast. I'm an investigative reporter, which I have to do for BBC Television and the Guardian newspapers in England, because, as you know, it's illegal to do investigative reporting under Patriot Act 3 in the United States. And that's why I wrote a book, because you can still do that until Patriot Act 4. So you got 3 months. Now, I want to thank, in fact, we all have to thank, WPFW and the Pacifica Network, your weapon of mass destruction in the Capitol. I want to thank C-SPAN and Book TV for letting me through the electronic Berlin Wall. That's fresh. And I very much want to thank Terry Kester, the raucous, caucusing Terry Kester. Don't miss his show. And a real journalist, Verna Avery Brown. Let's give it up for Verna Avery Brown. And my special guest tonight, I'll explain why, our friends of the Congo, thank you for being here, because we're going to talk about some of the enemies of the Congo, and also Greenpeace, as I've invited them here tonight, in thanks for the submarine. Really, they got me a submarine. But guys, you better put it back before someone notices it's missing. Now, I gotta warn you. My bosses at BBC Television got a call last week about Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. A call from a vulture. Paul the Vulture Singer. I didn't name the vulture. They call themselves vultures with a smile. Paul the Vulture Singer is worth about $4 billion, so he has someone make the call for him. Knuckle Dragger calls up and says to my bosses, who are making a film at BBC based on Vulture's Picnic, "We have a file on Greg Palast." I said, "We know, we've read it." Like Terry Verna was saying, "Yeah, you want to see the file on me? I show it to you." Okay, so I'll explain to you why I have my pants off in Miss Jamaica's room. There was a very good journalistic reason. You read it here. Took away their bullet, they can't smear me anymore. But that's not the point. The point is, Mr. Singer is not the Koch brothers, but Mr. Singer is the number one donor for the Republican Party. He is the chief sugar daddy and advisor on the economy to Mr. Romney. He's Mr. Romney's billionaire. Now, this is not partisan, because he may have purchased the Republican Party, but he does run to Democrats as needed. Thank you. Now, it doesn't matter if Mitt's billionaire, Vulture Singer, has a file on me. The important thing tonight is I'm going to show you the file on him. Okay? Now, for a good reason. Oh, but I did it. Is Mr. Goldfinger here? Goldfinger? No. I invited his buddy, Goldfinger. First chapter of the book is called Goldfinger. It is his fellow vulture, investor, so-called. There really is a Goldfinger. Lives in the D.C. area, operates out of here. The difference between the real Goldfinger and the James Bond villain is that the James Bond Goldfinger is kind of a Girl Scout compared to the real Goldfinger. You'll meet him. Now, tonight, we occupy the airwaves. Because, see, here. I don't know. Your brother-in-law, I know, has been saying to you, "Well, why are they occupying? You know, it's like the flea party. Why are they intense? You know, what is this all about? You know, they have no demands. They didn't, you know, unlike the Tea Party, they didn't have a $12 million PR firm to come up with a slick set of demands." As if you don't know. But I'm going to tell you. We're going to talk about why we occupy. You know why? I was just at Occupy Wall Street yesterday. And it's not about Wall Street. We don't dislike Wall Street. Wall Street is a place on a Google map. It's a piece of tarmac. It's a street sign. It's an address. No one cares about Wall Street. We care about people who have been occupying Wall Street for a century, beginning about the 67th floor and up in that canyon. The 1%, or the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, the singers, the gold fingers. It's not about the real estate. And what I want to do, and what I've been doing in Vulture's Picnic, is a 4-year investigation for BBC television on 5 continents. I don't know if there's a 6, I guess. Of that 1%. I want you to know their names. I want you to meet their trophy wives. I want you to know the movers and shakers who are moving and shaking us. You're going to meet them. And you're going to meet the people that they've moved and shaken. Because it's not about Wall Street. We occupy for Stanley Ann Mattingly. Now, Stanley Ann Mattingly, by the way, is an Osage Indian in Oklahoma, lives in a trailer. And on her property, like in much of the Indian reservation property, there's those horses that go up and down, the metal horses pull up oil, stripper wells, and they have a contract, the Osage, with a company to go around in a truck and pull out that oil, and they make a few bucks. Stanley Ann Mattingly was pulling in about $30 a month, which she really needed. And the truck would come in and pull 20 barrels out of her stripper well, and they'd mark down 16. Then they go to her neighbors, and they take out 11 barrels. They mark down 8. What? The difference is called overage or theft. Kind of, you know, a couple barrels here, a couple barrels there. It adds up, I'd say, about $160 million by my calculation. Now, how do I know this, by the way? Filming it. You see, before I was an investigative reporter, I was an investigator, gumshoe, did the big cases, and working with the FBI, guys, getting their info, they'd film, take 8, mark down 6. And all these trucks went back to a loading dock in Oklahoma. And there on the loading dock was a guy, the steely gaze, and he was exhorting the truckers, who were a bit scared, because they could lose their jobs if they didn't pay attention. And he said, I want more overage. I want more. The guy was Charles Koch. Now, we filmed it. We have the witnesses. And we have the wire. Because my question is, why? The guy was born with $1 billion, okay? He got the old-fashioned way from his daddy. He was head of the founder of the John Birch Society. I guess you could say he got it the old-fashioned way. But, you know, he's a billionaire. What's he doing in Oklahoma taking 30 bucks, 12 bucks a week or something from Stanley Ann Mattingly? We know the answer because we had his executive, one of his top guys, wired, talking about his conversation with Koch about, because he asked him why. And Koch said, according to the wire, I want what's coming to me. And that's all of it. And that's why we occupy. Now, and we occupy for Jason Alexander. April 20th last year, he was working on Deepwater Horizon. Cement blew out. Methane blew out. He ran down to hit the blowout preventer switch. He hit the switch and was vaporized instantly with 10 other workers on the rig. How could this happen? I mean, this is BP, British Petroleum. I mean, they have those green gas stations. That's the green oil company, right? They paint their gas stations green. We know that, right? And how could it be? Well, I've been investigating BP for 25 years. And I had some files and some friends, and one message came back from me from those connections. An eyewitness, a cable, but the cable came from, and you'll see it right in the book, came from the Caspian Sea. Now, how do I get an eyewitness in the Caspian Sea? I was in Vegas, get this message, and it says, I have first-hand knowledge, but would not be wise for me to communicate by this IT system. So I set up a secure line and find out, what the heck is this about? How could you be an eyewitness if you're halfway around the globe? The answer is, he was the eyewitness to an identical BP transocean rig blowout, which blew out for the same reason, that the cheap crap cement, the nitrogen quickset, quick money, save $1 million a day, cheap crap cement that doesn't always work. And it blew out before, 2 years before the Deepwater Horizon explosion, which is a bit surprising because BP and its Caspian oil buddies, U.S. oil companies, testified November 2009 before Congress, a year and a half after the Caspian spill, that, you know, we've done this for 50 years, no problem. So Congress overruled the Department of Interior to make sure they got their permits. They knew, and they covered it up. Because they covered it up, they kept doing that same crap cement job, and Jason's killed. In other words, Deepwater Horizon was not an accident. It was a homicide. Negligent homicide. That's what I used to bust people for. Now, wait a minute. Says an investigative reporter, you don't just take cables from the other side of the ocean. So my British network says you got to go in. So I come up with some cockamamie story, with bring my camera crew into Azerbaijan. And you all know where Azerbaijan is, right? If you don't, Baku is its capital, a name you will learn after the 82nd Airborne arrives there. That's how we learn these things, Mogadishu, Kabul, Saigon. You know, that's how Americans learn geography, right? So I get to Baku, and then I said, ooh, let's be cool, and head across the desert, or off the tracks, through the roadless desert to the BP terminal, and let's get the inside story, and we are busted, arrested by the BP police. They look like little toy soldiers with little oil barrels on their sleeves, but then quickly the military police and then the security ministry shows up. Ooh, that's quite an honor, because, you know, the torturer-in-chief himself came out. And I was a bit concerned because that meant that someone had tipped them off. You'll get that story in Vulture's Picnic. But of course, the first thing they do is they grab you and they say, give us the film. Okay, so we give them the film. Then they say, nah, give us the chips. See, they've learned that besides the film and the camera, you get these computer chips and you copy it. So they took our film, but at least they let me keep, you know, I'm still a journalist, they let me keep my pen. But they didn't realize that Ms. Badpenny had given me one of these Austin Powers jobs with the video camera in it, and I took the evidence out. It had happened before. I had the evidence. Homicide, not an accident. And that is why we occupy. By the way, there really is a Ms. Badpenny. That is her real moniker. In fact, you'll hear her music, and just like there really is a Goldfinger. Just so you know, because people keep asking me, is this real? At the first words of the book are everything that happens here happened. Okay. Now, we occupy for Mirvari. Now, you know, how do you cover up a blowout? I mean, you saw the business in the Gulf. It's not easy. It's finally a news event, right? The oil drilling for, you know, a couple weeks. How they cover it up? Well, it's BP. B stands for, you know, beatings, babes, bribery. Babes, Lord Brown used to send his 727 down to Azerbaijan, pick up the Azeri officials. I call it the Islamic Republic of BP in the book. And pick up the Azeri officials for a weekend of lap dancing in London, you know. So it's zippers down, mouth shut. That helps. Beatings. A lot of courageous people in this book. People say, oh, you're courageous, Palace. No. My sources are courageous. I fear for them. And I wish they would fear for themselves more, because the guy who sent me the cable, Caspian Man, I won't use his name, because he'll be lucky if he just has his career destroyed. Lucky. Just. But Mirvari, who is trying to form an oil union of BP workers in Azerbaijan, which is not legal. I have photos of her standing before a phalanx of cops, and then hidden in the computer, another photo of the 15 cops with nightsticks beating the crap out of her before they haul her off to jail. They did that 3 times, and I knew that after I met with her, they would do it the 4th time. She insisted. Courageous. And we occupy for her, for Mirvari.
You can hear great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org. Or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Your enthusiasm offends me. Please. Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I stand before you tonight a new man. All right, that's being a little optimistic. But I say that because after a lifetime of indifference to nature, I have changed. I am now a full-fledged, committed activist. How could such a transformation take place? How did I go from being Larry David, radical narcissist, to Larry David, radical environmentalist? Let me give you some background. I grew up in Brooklyn. Of all the wonders and pleasures that exist in nature, none of them could be found in Brooklyn. The only grass I ever saw was on the divider of the Belt Parkway. There were no flowers, just artificial ones. Every apartment had artificial flowers. People took great pride in their artificial flowers. And fruit, let's not leave out the fruit. Anything fake. We love good fake things. The greatest compliment you could give somebody was to mistakenly pick up a piece of their artificial fruit and take a bite out of it. That made their day. But I couldn't smell a real flower anyway. I was born with the ability to only smell disgusting things. I never smell anything pleasant, ever. You can shove a lilac up my nose and I wouldn't smell it. But urine and BO I can smell from 3 blocks away. And Brooklyn was not wanting for disgusting odors. Bus fumes, garbage, cigarette smoke. Everybody in Brooklyn smoked, even 9-year-olds. The whole borough was hacking and coughing and spitting. There was phlegm everywhere. It was flying at you from every direction, out of windows, cars, anywhere you walked. You had to keep ducking so you wouldn't get hit. It was like a shooting gallery. And of course, needless to say, there were no animals in my life. My mother hated animals. All of them. If she had her way, she would kill every living animal on the planet. She looked at extinction as a good thing. When an animal was put on the endangered species list, she went out and got drunk. Let them all die. Who needs them? What good are they doing? There was nothing in nature we appreciated. Sunsets were mocked. The moon in particular held no fascination for anyone. I don't think I ever heard anyone even use it in a sentence. Anyway, whatever harm's been done to the environment, and I know there's been a lot, it's never really affected me personally in any way. That is until a few months ago. The first thing that happened was I noticed something on my face, and it turned out to be a benign skin cancer, which was caused by ozone depletion on me. All right, you know, it was benign. Of course, when people noticed the bandage and asked me what happened, you know, I told them it was cancer. I played it up a bit. It's the first time anyone's felt sorry for me since they published my income 8 years ago. When you have money, the only way you can get any sympathy at all is to say you have cancer. You can lose a limb, no one would care. Only when they know you're going to die do you get anyone feeling sorry for you. And even then, some people don't. Serves them right, the rich prick. And that's what I am now, a rich prick. Prick always follows the word rich. If you're rich, you're a prick. Just the way schmuck always follows the word poor. So I went from a poor schmuck to a rich prick without hardly any transition at all. I was a poor schmuck longer than I've been a rich prick. Frankly, I'm not that much happier as a prick than a schmuck. I never thought I'd become a prick. Neither did my friends. They said, he'll never be a prick. And then boom, I'm a prick. Now I have all new friends. All pricks. You know, schmucks call me from time to time. I say, I can't talk to you, I'm a prick. So I had the skin cancer, okay, it was benign, they took it off, not terrible, I'm okay, my life goes on. But then, a few weeks after that, I was reading the newspaper when something caught my eye. And what I read has changed my life and brought me to this stage tonight. I'll sum it up in one word. Tuna. That's right, my friends. Tuna. I read that there's mercury in tuna, and it's just not safe to eat it anymore. Oh, sure, there's mercury in a lot of other fish. But I don't care about those other fish. I care about tuna. What am I supposed to have for lunch? I've been ordering tuna for lunch every day since I was 10 years old. This has been the only decision of my life that I can make every day with any degree of certainty and feel good about it. And I was a tuna connoisseur. I could tell the difference between Bumblebee and Starkist. I made my own, me, in the kitchen, chopping and dicing. I had my own recipe with pickles and peppers. Oh, sure, there's been peanut butter every now and then, but that's only when tuna's not available. I couldn't eat peanut butter every day. And I can't eat BLTs or grilled cheese because of the cholesterol. Now the lunch decision is the hardest decision of my day. It's painful, painful. Nobody wants to eat with me. The other day, a waiter asked me what I was having. I said, whatever. So I appeal to all of you to do whatever you can to clean up this planet. So one day, in the not too distant future, I can once again sit down at a restaurant and say, a tuna sandwich on whole wheat toast with lettuce and tomato. Hold the mayo.
And now for something completely different.